What's up, guys? Welcome to Running Things. My name's Riley. I'm your host. I'm also the editor over at tempojournal.com. We have a massive episode for you today. It's a London Marathon special edition, and we are going to be chatting to Aussie marathoners Sinead Diver and Brett Robinson. Before we do that, though, today's pod was made possible by our friends at Nike Running and the Nike Run Club app City Challenge Series. If you've been training for a race that you now know won't happen, don't give up on it. You can complete the marathon your own way in the You Can't Stop London Challenge in the NRC app. It's 42 kilometers, just like our athletes in London are going to be doing, and you've got a whole week to do it. It starts today, and whether you decide to do it all in one go or spread it out over the week, please make sure you follow local government area restrictions. Rumor has it Brett and Sinead each have four pairs of shoes across the Nike Zoom Fast franchise, and yes, that includes the Alpha Fly. They're giving those away, so make sure you complete the challenge, share your achievement badge on socials, tag in Brett, tag in Sinead, and you could be a winner. Super exciting today to be joined by one of three Aussies heading over to London for the marathon. I'm talking about fifth place in last year's 2019 London Marathon, Sinead Diver. Sinead, thanks for joining us.
No worries. How are you, Riley?
I'm pretty well, pretty well. Now, Good. Talk us through, first and foremost, when everybody's watching this, it will be Monday of race week. How have the last couple of months gone for you? Are you happy with your training? Where's everything at?
Yeah, it's been a really different training block just because of the whole situation with COVID. So I stopped training with the group pretty much in March. And since then, it's mostly been solo. But recently, I've been lucky enough to get Dave Ridley to help me out with my threshold sessions, which has been really, really good. So yeah, training has gone good. I think I've got a full marathon training block in, but just before that, around the time I did the Steigen 3K race, I had a bit of a niggle after that for a few weeks. So I was getting worried because it was getting close to when I needed to start marathon training, but thankfully it came good. And since then, everything's been pretty good.
If we go back to, say, New York last year, you had a lot of racing coming into that. I mean, you had...
Yeah.
Gold Coast half marathon in July, and then you pretty much had a half marathon, Sunshine Coast, one in the UK, and then you had obviously Doha 10,000 meters as well. So you had a lot of racing sort of leading into the back half of last year. Obviously haven't had that this year. Are you able to just sort of gauge where you're at through training, or do you really miss that racing to sort of test your fitness?
I do miss the racing, actually. So it'll be interesting to see if it makes much of a difference with this race coming up. But generally, I gauge my fitness through my threshold sessions. I usually, for the marathon, I can tell usually where I'm at based off those. But yeah, it has been a lot different not having races, because you always can, I don't know, take it a step further in a race. So you build a lot of confidence if you race well and frequently coming up to the race. And also before New York, I had a stint at altitude. So myself and Ellie were in Semmeritz. So that was great. So I haven't had that either. But yeah, I guess we'll see what happens. I still feel fit though. And I'm confident in my training this time around. It's just been a bit different.
Now, we've got some sort of training nerds who listen to the show. Have you had any sort of key sessions, like have you had sort of key threshold sessions or key workouts that you've hit and you've sort of got a lot of confidence from, or you've thought afterwards, geez, wow, that went better than I thought. I must be really fit. Like, is there anything that sort of stands out for you?
Yeah, I think the last few weeks, especially since I've had some help from Dave with pacing for the threshold sessions, we've knocked out some really big sessions. And there's one that Nick gets us to do every marathon build up. It's like almost 40k in total effort. And that one is always a good marker for me. So if I do that one well, it really builds my confidence. And yeah, it went well this time, so I'm happy with that.
What's the if I had a session to do that was almost 40k, I mean, I think a couple of days in the lead up I'd be nervous and unable to sleep. How do you prepare for that? The day before, is it all good? Are you sleeping well the night before a session like that?
No, I actually slept really badly the night before that session. So, which is probably good because that's what I'm like before a race anyway. And also Dave has to finish his sessions by 8:15. So I had to get up at like 4:30 that morning so that I could get an hour run in before I met Dave. And then we did the main session. So that was interesting. And it's been a long time since I gotten up that early. I know you do it all the time, but it's really hard.
It's the best time of the day. Now, I want to ask a little bit about, you spoke about adapting to, you've been training on your own, or you just had, very small groups, obviously, all the way back to March. But yeah. A lot of people, you're different to a lot of professional runners in that you're working as well. You've got a couple of young kids as well. It's a lot to juggle, especially in, one, when you're training to be a top five or a top 10 marathoner in the world, and two, when you're in the middle of whether it's 160, 200 Ks a week. How chaotic has it been for you in the last few months? Has it been hard to kind of juggle everything that's changing and going on?
Yeah, it has been really hard. Like, this has probably been one of the harder build-ups I've had because of COVID, because the schools were closed as well. So we had homeschooling, which has been a bit of a nightmare, to be honest. But having said that, I work in IT, and usually I go into the office. So I haven't been going into the office this time. So I've actually gained a couple of hours back a day. So that's really helped in training. So I get training done in the morning, and I don't actually start work till 11. So, which is really good. So I can do my training, come home, do some schoolwork with the boys, and then start work. And I work through till 5. So I've kind of got a good setup. I do like 4 days a week over 5 days. So that works out with hours and that. But yeah, it has been much harder this time, even with that extra time, just because of the homeschooling and been so restricted in, having to stay in 5Ks, like when you're doing 40K runs. It's a lot of laps of Albert Park. That was kind of hard, and just not been able to meet up with the group and that as much. Like, I've only been meeting the guys like for the last few weeks, just very recently. So I really miss that aspect of it as well. And yeah. And actually, I've just realized how windy it is in spring in Melbourne. I didn't know it was always like this, but it's been super windy. But yeah, I mean, it's been good though. Like, I'm really lucky to, have a race coming up. Like, not many people have had that this year. So that's been good.
Now, in my opinion, one of the most, I don't know if underrated is the right word. I think that word gets thrown around a lot, but maybe one of the most underappreciated marathoners in the world. 7th at London last year, 5th in New York on a really tough course. Did those results surprise yourself at all? And does it make it harder to sort of manage the expectations around your performances? Because we would look at, 7th in London, 5th in New York, and we would think, oh, wow, I guess she'll come top 5 again this year, or top 7 or top 10. Like, does it become hard to sort of manage that expectation? And do you have that expectation of yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's definitely easier going into a race as the underdog and not having that expectation over you. And like, when I went into London, I know Nick expected me to come top 10, but I certainly didn't. I was like, nah, that's not going to happen. But then I came 7th. Going into New York, I was more confident going into New York, I think, even though it was a course that didn't really suit me with all the hills and that. But I was training really well. I prefer to go in as the underdog without expectation. But I do feel that expectation now for London this year. But I'm not going to let it swamp my thoughts or anything. I'm just gonna, it's probably one of the strongest fields ever. I'm gonna race as best I can. And I don't usually worry so much about the placings. I kind of have a time that I want to get and my own goals for the race. And then usually, the placings just come. So if I have a good race, yeah, I'd like to place high.
And I mean, we think about your progression as well has been like not just in times, but your progression on the world stage. I mean, October 2018, you were winning the Melbourne Marathon, setting a course record. Yeah. Fast forward 2 years, you're competing, you know, you're in one of the most stacked fields ever in a marathon, right? Like, it's it's crazy to think how far you've come.
Yeah, I guess I feel I'm a bit time constrained because I started so late. I feel like I have a lot to achieve in a shorter amount of time. I guess I'm lucky in the opportunities that I've had. I'm lucky that Nick has been able to get me into those marathons. Like Melbourne Marathon really set me up like that time, you know, to get me into the major marathons. So it's been a whirlwind. It's been really cool though.
Now let's jump into talking about race day and the race itself. Obviously a very different London. We saw you led last year's London Marathon for the majority of the race, right? This year, of course, we're talking about 19 laps of a, you know, 2-point-something-kilometre course, the little loop around St. James Park. Will that change you going in with a set plan of how you'd like to run the race, or will you just kind of, you know, like you did last year, see how it unfolds and sort of react accordingly?
Yeah, I think you always have to be ready to just see how it unfolds and react, because last year we had so many discussions about the pace groups and everyone was very particular and specific about what pace groups they wanted. And then we all got to the start line and then that just all went out the window, like straight away. Nobody adhered to anything. And I took off, obviously, and because I had the time that I wanted to get. And then I felt, no, I should really run with the pace group. But once I did that for a few K, I realized it wasn't going to suit me because there's a lot of surging. And then I was happy just to go do my own thing. This year, I would rather run with a pace group. It's definitely more beneficial. It's just easier with running in a group. But the pace groups, I'm kind of in between the planned pace groups again this year. So they often change, though, the day before the race. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe they'll go have a group that is more suited to the time that I'm aiming for. If not, I'm just going to see what happens out there. Like, I want to run with the pace group, but I'm not going to, ruin my race just to run with the pace group. Like, I'm going all this way. I'm going to give it my best shot. So I'll just have to decide once the race starts how to race it, I guess.
Do you, I suppose you don't, but do you, when you get to the start line, especially now having performed so well in London and performed, you know, even better in New York and against great fields as well, like, when you roll up to a start line and you're next to, you know, Bridget Kosgei, the world record holder, or Viv Cheruiyot, or any one of these other names, what's the feeling like? Is it, wow, I'm lining up next to the world record holder, or is it just comfort now because you've been there, you're now a much more experienced marathoner?
Yeah, I'm not sure why I didn't get, why I didn't fully realize that, say, lining up in London and New York, like, I was totally comfortable with being there. I didn't feel out of my depth or anything. But then when I look back at photos, I'm like, oh, wow, look, there's Kosgei and there's, you know, there's Des Linden. And, you know, I'm like amazed that I'm beside these ladies. But at the time, I'm just completely consumed by how the race is going to go. And I'm not really thinking about anybody else.
Now, we know for a lot of athletes, and especially a lot of athletes in London, are going to be chasing the Olympic qualifier, right?
Yep.
You're in the position, you've earned yourself the position where you're currently our fastest ranked marathoner, so you'll be in line for that number one spot. And we know a lot of other marathoners right now are either going to be chasing that time in London or they're looking for a race in early 2021 to try and hit the time. You can kind of run without that pressure, right? Because you're the fastest ranked, so it's gonna have to be a lot of people run quicker to sort of knock you out of that Tokyo position. Is it a weight off your shoulders where you're really just running for position or for your own goals? You're not sort of locked into trying to have to hit that standard?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there would be more pressure on me if I had to get an Olympic qualifier, definitely. But having said that, you know, I do have my own goals for this race. I've set another goal that I want to hit, and you know, that I'm taking a lot of risks going over, I guess. I'm not taking it lightly, and I'm not kind of going over just to, you know, participate in a race. I'm going to give it everything. I've worked really hard for it. It's probably not going to be that easy to get back into Australia afterwards. So there's a lot of risks associated with this race. So I'd be very disappointed if I didn't get a PB. But, you know, the thing with the marathon is you can be in really great shape, and then depending on, there's lots of different factors that can make it go wrong. So we'll see how it goes. Like, ideally, if it's a good weather and I'm feeling good, I definitely would like to go faster than I did in London last year.
Which was 2:24.11, I believe. Now, you just touched on something that I guess I want to make sure people kind of understand and appreciate, and that is the sacrifice that not just yourself, but Ali and Brett as well are going through to line up in London. It's going to be a pretty tough, and of course, when people are watching this, it will be race week. So you'll be over in London, pretty isolated in your sort of hotel grounds for the week. Not a lot of interaction with other athletes, and probably a pretty lonely week. You'll race, and then depending on when you can even get a flight back home, of course, when you get back to Australia, you're going to have to go through another 2 weeks of hotel quarantine, which for a runner is like, you know, it's probably everybody's worst nightmare. So it's a huge sacrifice that you guys are making just to stand on a start line.
Yeah, like on the one hand, we're really lucky that we have this opportunity, and then on the other hand, there's been quite a lot more stress leading up to this race, just because of all the complexities. And actually, Nick has taken a lot of those on board for us and has organized, you know, so much for us and helped us out a lot. But there's still, you know, I'm anxious about being away from home for too long, been away from the boys for too long. The cost associated with having to get a business class flight back, if that's what I need to do to get into the country. And then there's the quarantine. So like if I was racing in Melbourne, I wouldn't have any of those worries in my head, but I do. But having said that, I could have not gone. I had the choice not to go to London. I still think it's worth it, and I definitely want to give it a shot. So I'm like really excited to go.
I can't imagine that when you were sort of given the option of, do you want to run London or not? I can't imagine a world where you would have ever said, no, I don't want to take this opportunity.
No way. I really didn't think it was going to go ahead. So I was really pleasantly surprised when they were like, no, it's definitely going ahead. Like given every other race has been cancelled, it's really impressive that they've managed to pull this off. And they've been so careful about everything, and they've really, really done it really well to keep everyone safe and secure in that. So I hope for their sake as well, for London Marathon, that it all goes really well and it's a successful race and event for them.
I have a couple of questions about the race experience itself, right? Like, I remember last year in London, I saw you were coming over Tower Bridge, and like the crowds, I still say to people that London, like that race was the best running event I've been to. The crowds were like 10 deep on both sides and the atmosphere was crazy. This year they've said there's not going to be a single spectator, right? It's
yeah.
How's that going to feel? It's just, you know, it's you and 30 other women out on the course and that's it.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that, because every other marathon I've been in there's been loads of crowds. I guess maybe not Melbourne so much, but there's still lots of people around, and I had like a few of the guys pacing me in that, so I didn't feel on my own. I do remember a stretch in London. It was just gone under this bridge where there was nobody, and it was really, really quiet and it was really eerie, and you just kind of feel like you're training. And then when you come into the crowd again, you kind of snap back into it and you're like, oh, I'm in a race. I need to, you know, focus. And so it will be a bit strange, I think, having no spectators. But I don't think it's going to bother me that much, to be honest. Like, I generally race like head down, eyes on the road, and I'm not really taking much notice of what's going on around me. Like, I know in New York you were saying like, that I looked straight at you when you were taking photos, and I can't remember that at all. I can't remember seeing you. If somebody had asked me if you were there, I would have been like, no, I don't think so. I didn't see him. Only for I saw all the photos after.
Yeah, it was coming off the Queensborough Bridge, like, you know, on yeah, that downhill have... and then you sweep left. And you just like, I've got the photo of you just eyeballing.
Yeah,
but, anyway.
Yeah, I can't remember that.
I've got one more technical question about the race, because I know if I don't ask it, people are going to blow up my comments. Nutrition, what's your general kind of, you know, hydration plan for in race?
Generally, so I have Morton. So prior to this, I've usually had the drink mix. And then in New York, I tried a few of the gels. So I usually have something every 5K. And I'll alternate between drink mix and the gels. But this time in London, we actually have the option of having something like every loop. So we could have 19 drinks. So there is the option to take, you know, have a smaller amount more regularly. But I think I'll probably stick to what I'm used to, because nutrition can go horribly wrong in a race. So I reckon every 2 laps or whatever, I'm just going to do what I normally do. I kind of have my nutrition plan down pat now. So I'm just going to stick with that, I reckon.
Now, for everybody here in Australia who's going to be watching the race, and I should say it's on at an ideal time for Australians. It's pretty much, I think it's like 4 p.m. Sunday or something like that, which
start really early, like 7:15 the women's race starts. So I think our, like, we will have to get up at 3 a.m. in the morning, which will be interesting.
So for all the Aussie fans who will be watching, and they'll be watching yourself and Ali and Brett and thinking, is this how they wanted to race? Is this going according to plan? We should be watching and seeing, okay, if Sinead is on sort of PB pace, or if Sinead runs a PB, then it's been a good day. She's going to be happy. Nick's going to be happy. It's been a successful race.
Sorry, what was your question?
Is that the definition of success, a PB for you?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, the Australian record is kind of looming as well. It's within my grasp. There's like it's Benita's record is 2:22:36. So if I was having a really good day, I would love to have a crack at that. But I think everything would need to go perfectly to get that.
There is talk of a pace group in that low 220s, isn't there?
Oh no! Well, there's a pace group for 2:18:219. And then the next pace group is 2:23:24. So I'm kind of in the middle. Yeah, so I'm going to have to make a call on the day, and I'm just going to have to see what happens.
Okay.
I would be disappointed if I didn't get, you know, a decent PB though. Definitely.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing field. It should be a fast course. Let's wait and see. I'm excited to see it. Now, it's probably hard for you to plan out kind of what's happening over summer, because you don't know when you'll get home and all those sorts of things, and you've got to factor in obviously the recovery from a marathon. But have you given much thought to what sort of the summer looks like, or the early part of 2021?
I would love to race Zatopek if it goes ahead, but that's in December. I don't know if it will go ahead or not. And then beyond that, I haven't really planned any other races. I'll probably do, like, if races all open up again, you know, I'll have a similar year to last year. I would do, you know, some half marathons, 10K road races. So it would be great if I kind of got the Olympic spot, you know, solidified in this race, so I didn't have to worry about it. Because I don't want to be chasing a spot in, you know, April next year. But I mean, we'll see what happens. I know that a lot of races that I normally do in Japan have been cancelled, or not cancelled, but they're only going to have Japanese people racing. So yeah, it's difficult to plan anything without knowing what options there are.
How important is that sort of, how important is that sort of, you know, still keeping up in those 10,000 meter races for your marathon running? Like, is that 10,000 meter speed still helping you when you're running marathons?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to keep that. Otherwise, it's just going to be harder to go the pace that you want in a marathon. 10K training is really beneficial, I think, for marathon training. So when I'm not in marathon training, like, which is very marathon specific, like I'm focusing on 10Ks, half marathons, definitely. Anything lower than 10K, probably I'm not really going to focus on anymore. I think I'm, you know, happy to leave the 3K and 5K distances and, yeah, focus on the longer stuff.
Now, we've kind of already asked a lot of sort of audience questions throughout this interview, but speaking of sort of 2021 plans, I mean, people are asking about whether you have any intention of ever running the Dublin Marathon.
Ooh.
Do you have races outside of the majors, you know, that are sort of career races, but are there sort of like, you know, bucket list races that you sort of think, geez, one day I'd love to go and run that?
Yeah, I would definitely love to run Dublin. It's, yeah, I mean, of course I would. It would be great. But it's usually in October. So I just haven't had a chance over the last few years. But I'll definitely race Dublin at some stage. And I want to get all the marathon majors ticked off as well. And I'd like to race them, not just, you know, do them. I would like to, yeah, that would be great. Like, I've never done Berlin or Tokyo. And I would love to do those.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, we'll see.
Sinead, I feel like, well, hopefully we'll get a chance to chat to you after the race as well, because it's going to be a super exciting race. It's going to be a unique race. I don't think I shouldn't say never, but I don't think we'll ever really see another kind of looped major like this with no spectators. I mean, maybe we will, but hey, on behalf of everybody, thanks so much for being on the show, and best of luck in London. We'll all be watching and we'll all be cheering for you to get a PB.
Thank you very much.
It's pretty exciting to hear the sort of paces or the goals that Sinead has. I mean, we all want a PB, right? And it certainly is looking like a fast course and fast conditions, hopefully, for a PB for Sinead in London. And maybe she can have a tilt at that Australian record. I certainly wouldn't want to be somebody betting against Sinead. She certainly makes the most of every opportunity she gets. Coming up now is our chat with Brett Robinson. It is my absolute pleasure now to be talking with Australia's best performer at London 2019, 2:10.55. And at the start of 2020, he actually broke the national record for the half marathon. So we're expecting big things from him in London this weekend. Brett Robinson. Brett, how are you?
Hey, Riley, I'm very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Mate, it's great to have you on, and it's exciting to be talking about an upcoming race. It's been a long, lonely winter without racing, but how are you going? By the time people get to watch or listen to this, it will be race week in London. Mm-hmm. How have the last couple of months been for you?
So the whole COVID thing has been annoying for everyone, me included, but I think I'm now one of the lucky ones that actually gets to go overseas and gets the race. Like, I know a lot of my training partners are looking for races and there's just nothing available. So I feel very lucky that I get to do this. My training for this has been really, really good. So better than any other marathon prep. So I'm confident that I'm going to have a good race.
That's exciting to hear, because, you know, when we think about, obviously, New York, last year was kind of the end of a pretty long year, and then you kind of took maybe the disappointment of New York, and obviously your performances at the start of 2020, I think it was the half marathon was in February, obviously an amazing performance. Like, how has it been sort of judging fitness, not off races, but just off training?
Yeah, it's been hard. Because that's the thing, like, you don't really know how you're going. But I think that's always is the thing in marathon training as well, because you don't race that often in the lead up to a marathon. So your training can be going well, you can be feeling good, but you don't really know until you get out there on the day. And so many things can go, like, have to go right for the marathon to be successful on the day. But just going off training and training with Jack, like, I've been able to tell that things are going well. I'm heading the right direction. And before, like, Stewie left for London to go and race, I was training with him. And so, like, I knew when you look at his results, If I'm anywhere near him, then you can tell you're going pretty well.
Now, it seems funny to say, but you're becoming an experienced campaigner in the marathon now. I mean, this is your, I guess, your fourth prep if we think about you spent all the time sort of at Falls by yourself a couple of years ago, and then obviously you had a London prep in New York and now this one. Has anything, apart from sort of the lack of training partners for the last couple of months, but has Nick sort of brought any changes into the main training sessions for you?
This year we actually have done less sessions. So when lockdown started and everything, we didn't know what was going on. So Nick's like, let's just tone it back, and went back to two sessions a week. And before I used to do three sessions and a long run. So now this time I'll do two sessions and my long run's more quality. So I've been able to do some very good long runs and like running pretty fast at the end, which in other times I was like doing a session on the Saturday, then a long run on the Sunday. So I found it hard to like choose which one to focus on. Like, and so I'd probably do like half-assed in both of them a little bit, where now I think like I'm really getting that tiredness in my legs running for 35K and then try and run fast. So I think that's something that I'm happy that I'm doing. It was something I wanted to do. And then when Corona came around, Nick's like, oh, let's try this. I'm like, yes, please.
And you're obviously, you're living in a different part of town now as well, which like for a runner, someone who runs, you know, twice a day, most days or whatever, like a change of scenery or a change of routine is kind of a big deal. How has that adjustment been? You found places to kind of help you prepare for London and train well?
Yeah, like where I live now is like probably some of the best running in Melbourne. Like especially now when we're supposed to be within our 5K radius, like my running every direction is ridiculous. So I'm like, that doesn't really bother me, that 5K radius. So it's been good. It's been a fresh start, and I've been able to discover new runs and get on some trails and stuff, which has been good. Where my old house, I was always on concrete and pretty much just did the same loop every single day. Where now, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, like for my hour runs, I always do something different, which is kind of cool.
Let's talk about going over to London. Obviously, you've got fond memories there. I mean, your race last year was fantastic, ran a 2:10.55. What are you expecting from the race this week in London?
I'm expecting to run fast. I do have time goals in my head, and like I think I can run under 2:08. But I want to get there and just run a good race. Like I don't know what the conditions are going to be. I don't know who's going to be around, what pace. I know we've got pacer for about 64 minutes at halfway, maybe a little bit over. Maybe the pacing's bad, so it might slow it down. But if there's guys around me in my pace group, and then it'll be trying to beat all them. So if I can beat all them and feel like I'm finishing well, which is something I want to do, like every other marathon I've got to 30K and I'm like, geez, it's going to be a long last 12K. Where this time I want to get to 30K, I'm like, all right, let's make this a race and let's finish strong here. So that's my big goal. And I think if I can run hard that last 12K and not be blown up, I think I can run under 2:08.
Now, I typically won't talk about sort of off the record or private conversations we've had, but I remember the day after London last year, Jack, yourself and I were sitting in a coffee shop in London and we were sort of just like debriefing on the race. And just the confidence that you both had from having a great day in London, and you both kind of looked at each other and said, we're kind of racing each other now to see who can be the first to break the Australian record.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that day we both felt like, the next day, like, we can run faster. Like, we know what the marathon is now, and we've both felt like we had a couple of minutes in us. We both had like a few minor problems in that race, which gave us confidence to think, yeah, all right, we can do this. Like, we can get down to that under 2:08 and break that Australian record. And it was just, I don't know, it is whoever does it first, but I think we're both going to break it at some point. So hopefully I break it next week, and then in his next one, he can break it. But as long as I get it again.
Yeah. Let's talk about, like, I mean, the specifics of this very unique London Marathon, 19 laps of a 2.2 kilometer or 2.15, whatever it is. Does that kind of loopy atmosphere or dynamic, does that change tactically how you approach the race? Like, is it going to be more important to sit in a pack or get out in front of a pack, or like, will that kind of change how you'll approach things?
I think it's going to be very important to switch off. in it and just like kind of, for me, I'm just going to try to get in the pack and just switch off as long as possible and hopefully I can get past halfway before I start thinking about anything. But it's, yeah, I don't know, because like a 10K on the road always feels a lot easier than a 10K on the track. As it like just goes by, like 25 laps is just like, ugh. So I'm hoping it's not like that. I'm hoping I can just switch off, like get in a good group and just be dragged along. But I don't think it's going to be that big difference because it's like you got the best athletes in the world turn up to this. Like if you can't lift for this, it's like you got a problem. So I just want to go there. I want to try to run fast. So like I don't think no matter the course, it's going to be a good course. I know it's going to be a fast course. So I think it'll be fine.
Speaking of the competition in the field, obviously we know about the main couple of guys, but there's a bunch of like sub 205 guys, East Africans, most of them Ethiopian. And then there's, you know, the field is stacked full of Brits who Mo Farah is apparently going to be pacing towards that sort of Olympic qualifying standard. So there's these kind of two extremes. And then there's yourself who's somewhere kind of in the middle of that. I mean, you and probably Jared Ward are going to be similar, but have you sort of looked through and identified guys you either think you want to stick with for part of the race or people you think, geez, I really want to finish ahead of this guy?
Yeah, it's it is tough because like I was actually speaking to Nick about this morning and he was like, oh, like what kind of guys is there around? And I'm like, around like the 206, 207. I'm like, there's a fair few sub like 205 guys and then there's like 210, 211 guys. And there's not many in between. Like there's Sondre Mollen from Norway, Arne Garbias from Germany, and then Jared Ward. They're all like, Sondre's run 205, and he might go faster pace as well. So yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think like Arne Garbias and Jared Ward are two guys I'll be trying to beat. And like, if I beat them, I think we'll have to run fast to do that.
Yeah, you will have had a good day. Now, it's, you know, in marathon week, it's the thing everybody's going to be talking about is obviously the battle between your new mate Kippers and Kenenisa Bekele. How do you feel about the matchup? Do you have a favorite? Do you think Kippers is going to get him? Like, yeah, how do you
I
see
don't know.
It?
I don't even want to think about it. It's just like I feel sorry for whoever gets beaten. Like and I feel like I feel their pain as well because like I looked after both of them like. It was probably Bekele when I was younger and then like doing Ineos and stuff like that and seeing Kipchoge, like I've just got like a soft spot for both of them. So like if one of them loses, I'm so, oh, like it's kind of, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of that it just, it's the end for one of them a little bit. And it's just like you're the pinup boy now and you'll see ya.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but.
I think I'm just, the only thing I'm not sure of, like, not to say it would be anticlimactic, but like people are forgetting there's also a bunch of, as I said, like there's a bunch of 204 guys like Osinet Geremu who came second last year. He's a 202, low 202 guy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's not just going to be turning up just to like run behind these guys for fun, you know?
Yeah. I actually asked a friend of both of ours yesterday who will win. And she works for Nike. She's from New York. And she said, stupid question. So she's very, very Kipchoge.
Yes. Shout out to Kate if you are listening or watching. By the time, as I say, but by the time people are consuming this podcast or watching on YouTube, it's race week in London. Now we know we're hearing about kind of the pretty strict conditions for you guys in race week. You're going to be sort of off at a hotel that has parklands and whatever else, and you can't leave the grounds, can't interact with a lot of other athletes.
Yeah.
What's your, and you know, and I know before London, you know, we got to go out and have coffee and you guys could go and do stuff around the city. How will you handle that week? Is that a good thing for you or a bad thing for you to have sort of nothing to do?
It's probably good. Walking around New York's probably not the best thing you can do. but yeah, I don't know. It's good because I'll just get a rest and just get a like, focus on the race and getting ready for the race. But yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty boring week in the lead up to there. And unfortunately, Jack's not coming now. So obviously we do everything together and it would have been good to have him there, but we're just going to make it extra boring being by myself.
Do you, you know, knowing that it's been great to see guys like Stewie and the Gregsons and Rambo off in Europe doing their thing and, you know, you're about to go off and have your fun. And obviously, as you mentioned, Jack obviously not traveling over to London. Do you feel, given you are all part of the same training group, do you feel a little bit like you're, obviously you're there for yourself, but you're also kind of, you are representing your group and kind of racing for those guys as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a big thing of our group is that people get results and that creates an expectation within the group as well to like, you have to perform as well. I think we've been very successful over the years. And I think maybe at the Olympics, you could say it, like we had heaps of good results because it just was like, it had been a good season for everyone. And it was just, everyone was like, all right, you can't let down the boys or can't let down the group. So yeah, I definitely feel that. And I don't know, seen Stewie run an Australian record, so I better try to run an Australian record, I guess.
Well, I love that you're putting it out there, you know, it's not like you're not sort of hiding or kind of keeping your cards close to your chest. I think it's going to give everybody back here in Australia watching, like, that gives us something extra to sort of cheer for, you know, and sort of keep our eye on. Let's talk about after the race.
Yeah.
Have you, and maybe people might not know or not understand, it's not easy to get into Australia right now if you're stuck overseas. Have you got a plan for how you'll get home? Do you know what you're sort of going to do there?
I had a flight and I think it's been cancelled. So I didn't really know this was an issue until about last week. So I was like, and he called me and he's like, yeah, I'll just let you know, you're probably not going to get home for a bit. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I just got a new puppy, so I've got to organise him to get taken care of, and which is a bit annoying. But, yeah, I think I'll have to stay maybe 2 or 3 weeks and just hope to get on a flight at some point. But I don't know. And then looking at London, like their cases are going up right now and they're going to lockdown. So as Melbourne's coming out, London's going in. So just going to drag it out for myself.
Yeah, you don't want to miss the summer here.
No. Hopefully, like I was hoping to get back for the AFL Grand Final, but I don't think that's a chance at all.
And of course, when you get back here, you're going to have to do your 2 weeks in quarantine anyway, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like to be honest, I just want to do the race, then fly out straight away, do my 2 week quarantine. And then I'm back home where if I drag it out for 3 weeks and then have to do my quarantine, then it's just kind of like going to feel like I'm gone for ages.
Talking about your race goals and sort of more so talking about 2021, you've got a 210.55. You are, you know, at this stage, you're obviously well in the Australian team for the marathon. Achieving a high 207 or even if you achieve something in the 208 to 209s, you're pretty much going to cement a place in the team. Does that afford you the ability in 2021 to run some more 5Ks and 10Ks? Does it sort of take some weight off your shoulders?
Yeah, I think it would definitely take weight off my shoulders because then I can just go back to getting ready for the race instead of like watching what other people do and wondering if I have to run another marathon or if I do run another marathon, it can be more about trying to win a marathon or not necessarily training, like racing for a time or whatever, because like that doesn't always work out well and a lot of pressure comes for that. And yeah, I always like to go back to the shorter distances like 10K and stuff like that because I think that's one of my strengths is because I have that speed in my legs from being a track runner, I find running 3 minute Ks comfortable. So I'll never just stay running marathons. I always will go back for a bit before running marathons.
I guess Zatopek would be a pretty hard one to make, I guess, depending on your London schedule.
Yeah, depending. If I could get back straight away, it would be a chance. But, I might be pushing it a little bit. And it sometimes takes me a while to get going after a marathon.
Now, we had a couple of audience questions, which you would have seen. I'll go through a couple of them. Yeah. the first one, though, is about... All right, we did have a couple of audience questions that I want to go through. The first one is about the taper. Now, for amateur marathoners, we all kind of obsess over the taper and we're, you know, scouring posts on the internet trying to figure out what the hell we need to do in a taper. What's your approach for race week? Is it just sort of short jogs every day? Is there any sessions? And do you enjoy the taper or is it kind of make you a bit antsy?
Yeah, this one is a little different because I have international flight a week before the race. So I'm also at the same time getting over a flight as I'm tapering. So, but it's pretty much like a few 30-minute runs I think maybe the second, maybe Tuesday I have an hour run, and there's like 2:30s, a 40-minute run, and like 20 minutes run before the race. So it's just short runs, but like I kind of feel like doing more because I'm used to running so much, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, you go for a 30-minute run and then don't do anything for the rest of the day, and I'm just like, what do I do? And even just like, yeah, to pass the time, I just feel like going for a run, but I do definitely get a bit antsy and want to be doing more.
Will you spend any of that downtime, I guess, writing coaching plans now, probably?
Yeah, right? I definitely will have to because, I don't really want to be doing any the day of the race. So, and I'm sometimes like leaving at the last minute, so I better start doing them before the day of the race.
We've also had a bunch of questions about in-race nutrition. It's another thing that people kind of are not too sure on or can get wrong. We understand you will probably have the luxury of like just set drink tables. So essentially you can get a drink every 2Ks or 2.5 days or whatever it is. What kind of works for you and what will you be doing on race day?
I'll be going about every 5K, just because that's what I've been training with and that's what most marathons are. I'll be having just like Morton gels with a bit of water. I don't have the drink anymore. I just prefer having the gels that just sit better in my stomach. I think that's what Bikili does as well, actually.
Really?
But so yeah, someone sent me his, I think the Morton guy spoke to my coach and sent him his plans. I was like, yeah, I'm going to copy that. Works for him. It'll work for me. And that's just what I've trained with. So yeah, that'll suit me. But I don't know. I was speaking to Sinead and she's like, oh, what do you reckon with the, because you can have it every 2.5K, but I don't know. It just feels like you'd be eating the whole time for two hours straight. So yeah.
The last audience question I want to ask you is, are you going to wear a watch this time?
Yeah. Yeah, I will. I don't know why. I just keep changing my mind if I wear watches or not. So I didn't at London. I did New York. When I ran my half marathon, I did. But then I like see this footage of me with like 500 meters to go and I'm just like going like this, looking to see how far I got to go. And like, and that's the reason I don't want to wear it, because like I just get obsessed with like the pace and stuff like that. So I think I'm a lot better at just going, all right, I'm just wearing it for to check occasionally. But like if I want to be running 301s and I look and it's 302s, I'm not going to go, all right, I need to go faster. I'm just going to go, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm going to go at.
But that's the thing, right? And I think that's something that all like amateur runners can relate to, is we get obsessed with, if you're supposed to be running, as you say, if it's 301s and you're on 302s, you panic and then it's like you're surging and it's just not good for you.
And your body's like running the pace it wants to be running. So it, just because I want to be running 301s doesn't mean I should be. And if I start running 301s, I'm probably going to run 315s, 320s at the end. So
is that a bit of a, not a secret, but is that something that comes with experience, not just at the marathon, but you're an Olympian in the 5K and you're obviously, you've been running forever, but is that something that comes with experience, just that sort of calmness and knowing in the race, okay, well, this might not be the pace that I thought I was going to run, but this is where my body wants to be, and just like being calm about it and going with it?
Yeah, I think it's something I've definitely learned over the years, and just and with my training as well, like when I go for hour run, like I don't always wear my watch. I'm like, all right, let's just go by feel. Let's just go and do a loop that I know is about an hour. And I don't care what pace, because like, who cares if I run 410s or 420s? Like what's the real difference? So that's just something I've practiced over the years. And then I think it's also just my personality a bit as well. Like I'm not someone who like stresses over things that much. I stay pretty calm. So I think that helps me for sure.
All right. So to finish off, for everybody who's going to be watching the race on Sunday, and it's going to be amazing. But when we're watching and seeing how you're going and refreshing live feeds and all that sort of stuff and time checks, the plan is pretty smart until sort of the 30K. And then if you can dial it up, the plan is to dial it up from there. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe like the last, 4 or 5 laps. If I can be running faster than I was in the middle, then that would be a good sign.
Amazing, mate. On behalf of all of us, it's so exciting. It's not just exciting to have racing back. It's exciting that the organizers have put together this amazing field, and it's even more exciting knowing that we've got, you know, Australia's best marathoners sort of taking part. So we'll all be watching. We wish we could be there live. But mate, all the best and good luck.
Yeah, thank you very much, and hopefully I put on a good show.
It's great to know in advance sort of what each athlete is going to be aiming for, and it's so great and so exciting to hear Brett talk about looking at that sub 208. Of course, the great Rob De Castella owns the Australian record 207.51. So it's cool to know that Brett's going to be potentially having a crack at that if he's feeling good on the day. And also if you are watching and are following the race on Sunday, to kind of see if he's maybe tracking a little bit behind that pace during the race, he is planning on coming home pretty strong. So certainly cool to know that. Until then, we'll see you next time and enjoy the race on Sunday.